welcome to the Lately in PHP podcast. This is episode number 5. As usual, I have here with me Hernani Jopert, my usual co-host. Hello, Hernani. How are you doing?
Hello, Manuel. I'm always welcome to be here. I'm very excited about this episode and just wanted to say warm welcome to everybody.
Okay, this time we have a guest, Jason Roberts from the United States, and I'd like to welcome Jason. All right, Jason.
Thank you very much for having me on the show. I'm excited to be here.
But first, let me tell you about a couple of events of interest. First, I'd like to comment on the IndieConf that actually we have talked about it in the previous podcast episode. This is an event organized by Michael Kimsel company, WebDev Publishing. It will take place on November 13th in Raleigh, North Carolina, in the United States. This is basically an event that will help independent developers to learn interesting soft skills that will be helpful in their profession, like answering questions on how do I find clients, how do I get paid, what should my contracts look like, and other than that, what sort of technologies do I need to know. Another interesting event that coincidentally will also focus on soft skills is Day Camp for Developers that will take place it's a remote event and that will happen on November 6th, and this is an event organized by my good old friend Carl Evans. You may remember him from the from Zend. He used to be the Zend Developer Zone manager. And this event will also focus on soft skills that are interesting for the independent developers to develop, for themselves to evolve in their careers. And we'll talk about things like career management, technical writing, and things like writing a resume that gets read. It will feature some of interesting, well-known developers of the PHP community. So it will be probably one event that you may want to attend. This event is actually virtual, unlike the IndieConf, which is physical. It will take place in a physical place in North Carolina, and this one you can register and attend online. So if you are interested in evolving your careers, I would suggest that you try to attend to these events. But let's get back to our guest. Well, I invited Jason here because Jason and his colleague Justin Vincent have a podcast, Texting Live, which I listen regularly, and I think it would be interesting to invite them. This time I'm inviting Jason to, because they talk about interesting things. They also do PHP development, and they also are into entrepreneurship projects. One of the projects that I have heard from Jason in that podcast is AppIgnite. Jason, would you like to talk a bit about your project so we can get to know a little more about it?
Sure. AppIgnite is a web app that will allow non-developers or non-technical people, give them the ability to create a web application without having to write code. Obviously, you can be a developer and use it too, but I'm specifically targeting people who don't know how to code. Because if you want to create some web-based application, you know, it's, you're pretty much out of luck unless you know how to code. And you actually have to know quite a bit. Even if you know how to, you know, write PHP, it can still be very difficult. And I've just written so many web apps at this point, and I've just noticed so many patterns. I just felt like there's got to be a way that you can do this.
Yeah.
Maybe through a series of wizards and stuff that could walk somebody through it and build most of the application without having to write code.
Right, and basically, what exactly does it do? From what I understood, it is not yet available, right?
Yeah, it's not quite ready yet. I've had some people beta test it, sort of, you know, just give a first look, and they ran into some of the same errors. So I wanted to take a step back and just get some of that stuff sorted out once and for all before I open it up to anybody else. But yeah, the way it works is that the way I describe it is, have you ever used like a one of these form builders like WooFoo? Have you ever heard of that?
Yeah,
Manuel.
Yeah, I heard, like, but I don't use it, but I've heard it. About.
Well, it makes it very easy to create a form. You can just drag and drop some form components onto your page, and you just kind of drag and drop, move them around, name them, and then presto, you have a workable form. And so I almost envisioned it kind of like a combination of a WooFoo meeting Ruby on Rails. So in Rails, you can have all these complicated relationships between models or between tables, and but you know. Well, Ruby on Rails and the similar projects like Django or CodeIgniter or things like that, they still require you to be an expert coder to really get anything built. It might make your job easier than if you had to write it from scratch, but it's still going to take you a lot of work. And where one of those frameworks might take something that would have required 4 or 5 months to build, and you can do it in like 2 or 3 weeks, you know, I want to take that down to like, you know, 30 minutes. You know, or an hour or something like that.
So and, it basically is a code generator, or what
that's
comes
right.
out of it?
Yeah, so it will, you go through a series of wizards or even like property pages, just sort of, you know, changing the settings, adding fields, setting what the validations are going to be, things like that. And then it will generate all of the code, all the HTML, all the PHP, all the database tables, everything. Mm. Every single time you make a change, it will generate any and all code that you would need. But it's all behind the scenes. And I think if the first version, the early versions of this, it's just going to be purely hosted remotely on, you know, my cloud or my servers, so that you don't actually have to get in and set up your own hosting account or anything like that. Now, at some point, I might make it so that you can have access to your sort of directory structure. So if you want to go in and override certain functions, you can do that. And so that way, for a developer who would say, okay, I can use AppIgnite to generate 85% to 95% of my application, but I have some custom stuff I want to do, that you can get in and override these PHP or JavaScript functions and do whatever you want.
Yeah, it sounds interesting. So is this going to be a paid application? What is that? Is this a business? What do you intend to do once if you find it ready to release or to make it available somehow?
Yeah, I mean, I'm always playing with the idea of whether I want a freemium version or just have it all pay. I mean, it'll definitely be a paid version. And I think for businesses that want to build software or want to build a web application, it'll be extremely valuable to them because they can cut down on their costs, you know, by orders of magnitude. But I think it could also work for small companies or startups that want to build something and maybe they want to get something up quick, because, you know, coders kind of like to do everything their way, right? They have their favorite set of libraries, their favorite set of tools.
Right.
So, and I'm the same way. You get kind of persnickety about it. Well, this is the way I like to name my variables. This is the way I like to design my database tables. But if you can say, look, you know, you can design this thing in 10% of the time and then override some of the functions, then it would probably entice a lot of developers to say, all right, screw it. That's actually preferable. You know, maybe I don't have some of the flexibility I might have wanted if I wrote every line of code myself. But if everything is nice and clean and consistent and works, then it's hard to argue that it wouldn't be a smart thing to do. So I'm thinking that, yeah, I mean, it's going to be something that is going to be a paid application. There may be a free version that has sort of a limited it limits the power, but then, you know, maybe scale the price based on how complex the application is or how much user interactivity there is. I haven't really decided how I'm going to scale that yet. But
are there any similar applications out there, or is this something that you are doing in a way that you're going to be innovative?
Well, there's a couple things that are sort of similar. There's something called QuickBase that Intuit owns. They bought QuickBase, I think maybe 2006 or something. But it's very expensive. It's like $60 per user per month. So it's really for companies to use to build these sort of database web-based web apps that you might have in the old days used Access to build, but you want it to be web-based. You want it to be more powerful, scalable than, say, an Access application. So they've targeted enterprises, and enterprises can build these large applications, and they can still do it. Even paying $60 a month per user, it's still probably a very small fraction of what they would have to – would have cost them to build a thing from scratch. Now, I don't want to go after enterprises because I think there's more room for building a business if I went after sort of the smaller businesses. David Hennermeyer Hansen called it in one of his startup talks startup school talks, Fortune 5 million. There's like the one or two person startups, hey, we need this application. I wish we could just build something. And then they can use AppIgnite to just go through a series of wizards and go name their record types and their fields and the permissioning and, you know, how things are sorted and displayed and filter on the pages. And, you know, and then maybe go and if they want to and edit the themes or edit the actual CSS to make it look however they want it to. But there are also probably companies, larger companies that have departments who would love to have some custom application that could do something that they need done, but they just don't have the resources allocated to them within their corporation, and they can't afford to outsource it to some company to spend, you know, $30,000 or $50,000 to build.
Yeah. So does your application generate code that people have to install in their servers to run it, or does it actually run the generated application code?
Yeah, so it generates everything, and what you would do is that you would just come in, log in, create an account on AppIgnite, and let's say you said myapp.appignite.com, okay? And you would just design it however you wanted to, and then you can either make it a public application, you could create your own domain, so maybe like phbclassesapp.com maps to, you know, mywebapp.appignite.com, and so it looks like it's your own app running on your own server will be running on my cloud, and that way you wouldn't even have to mess with it. But then, like I said, I might open it up so that people can have access to the generated code so that you so what I do is I generate, so for instance, like the model classes and the view classes, there is a directory of, say, model classes, right? And let's say we were creating a project management app, and you had a project model and you had a task model. Well, each one of those, you would have a subdirectory within your model subdirectory called generated, and it would have the generated classes. And then you would derive from those classes your project and task classes, and you would have overrides for all of the major functions, you know, before save, before delete, after delete, that kind of stuff. You can, or the functions themselves, and so you can do whatever you want. If you want, if you like, hey, this is 95% the way I want, but I need to override a couple of these functions to tie in with something else.
Right. It sounds interesting. And what about, you said you have provided access to some beta testers. What is the acceptance that you are getting from them so far?
Well, you know, let's see, that was early on, and that was a few months back. And I think people, you know, it was only like maybe a dozen of friends of mine who were technical. And they all got it. They were like, this is cool. It's like when this works completely, they thought it would be really exciting because they saw how powerful it would be. Everybody ran into like two or three of the same bugs at the time because of some relationships between models are automatic, and some people were recreating those same relationships because I hadn't made that clear. And so things were a little confusing because the UI hadn't really been finished up. So that's why I figured I need to take a step back and really get that squared away before I had people use it again. But I think it's like a lot of things. It's like the idea itself could be is really enticing. The question is, can I execute on it? Can it work well enough and be flexible enough and easy enough to use that it's a solution? Because you hear about these kind of things and it's just still hard to use and confusing, or it's just not flexible enough, and people are like, ah, screw it, this is just not worth it, I can't make it do anything I want it to do. So that's what I'm focusing right now, is I'm really just trying to get the UI complete enough so that when you walk through it, it's easy and to understand. And one analogy I use is sort of like, I want it to be almost as easy as, say, going to like a bank ATM to take your money out of the automated tellers. Like, you go in and you say, all right, do you want to withdraw or deposit money? You know, do you want to, or transfer? Do you want to, okay, if you want to withdraw, do you want to go withdraw from checking or savings? I mean, it's like, you can't really make a mistake, right? I mean, it just asks you a series of questions, and then you have a few answers, selections that you can choose from, and it's just hard to screw up. And that's what I'm trying to do. I don't want this sort of like Photoshop experience where, you know, if you open up Photoshop, it's like, all right, great, here's this powerful machine, now create something. You're looking at it going, okay, I have no idea where to start. I have no idea.
Somebody has to start.
Yeah. You don't want people to feel like they have to read a 300-page manual before they can create something. You want somebody to just be able to walk in, they get asked a couple simple questions. If they don't understand something, there's something that says, hey, that says, if you don't understand what this term is, you click this button, you know, here's an explanation kind of thing.
I see. Jason, one question. This tool, is it database independent, or is that an option for the user to export the project and run on their own boxes if they grow big enough?
Yeah, you know, that's something I was thinking a lot about. And I think what I'll do is I'll make it so that if people want to export it, they can. And that'll probably come at a price, right? Because if I'm charging, say, $30 or $50 or $100 a month for some application, depending on the size of it, and then someone says, oh, I want to export it, well, then I lose that revenue, so I'd have to charge some price. If you want to take everything and generate it and move it off, I'd probably charge some kind of a fee for that. But we'll see. Right. I want to make something that's fair and reasonable that doesn't undermine the whole pricing model. But I've been creating it in that, with that thought in mind, because if I was a developer, I'd be like, hey, this might be great for the first 6 months or year, but if we want to scale out, or we want to do all these other things, or we want to run it on our own servers in our data center or something, then you want that option. You don't want to feel like, okay, I can't ever leave. And you also want the code to be as clean and simple, so clean and simple that people look at it and go, oh, this is code. This is just how I'd write the code. I don't want this to be this generated mess where I look at the code and you're like, I have no idea what this is.
Right.
Like, do you remember Dreamweaver back in the day? Did you ever just look at Dreamweaver?
Yeah.
Yes.
Did you remember the JavaScript?
Never used it.
Did you ever look at the JavaScript code that it generated?
Yes.
Impossible to decipher. You just had to say, well, I guess I'll generate this, but I'll never be able to edit the code.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I like about code generation, and I'll answer your question about the database stuff in just one sec, Anani, but the thing about code generation versus, say, like meta code programming, like in Ruby, is meta programming, there's a certain amount of magic, I think, that you just have to understand how the framework works to make any changes,
right?
Because you write something and right, there might be like 4 or 5 lines of code and all this amazing stuff happens, but you really have no idea how it really happened. So getting in there and changing the stuff takes either a certain amount of active faith, and it also takes a certain amount of expertise. What I wanted to do is generate only the code that you needed without the reliance on some big giant framework. So maybe there's only like 2 or 3 very small utility classes, like for validation or formatting, which you could look at and understand in like 3 minutes if you know any PHP at all. And the rest is like, you know, 100 lines of code, 150 lines of code. You can look at it and you'd be like, oh yeah, that's all it does. Easy. No problem. You know, got it. And that's what I wanted, because I hate deciphering other people's code. And it's just a nightmare. And I didn't want to have to do that. So I'm trying to make it as clean and standards based, follow like the Zen style guide on like how everyone else is writing their code.
Yeah.
How they put the braces, what's capitalized, you know, trying to make it exactly like that. And in terms of the database stuff, the first version, see, I wrote, I have one guy I'm writing this with. His name is Guyon, and Guyon and I are writing it, the first version, to work with MySQL. And we wrote our own object relational mapper, because the ones that we evaluated at the time just either A, didn't do everything we needed to do, or it didn't have the documentation to support stuff, so we couldn't understand how to get to do certain things.
I see.
Which, you know, obviously, if there was a form that was really mature and well documented and flexible to everything, I would have been happy to take it. But we ended up having to write our own, and which is nice because it's the resulting generated database code is very clean and very simple, and it works with MySQL. But we've also done a certain amount of work to generate to use MongoDB. So ultimately, what I'd like it to do is that you could select whatever database. You want to use a NoSQL database like Mongo, or you want to use MySQL, or maybe at some point, you know, Postgres or something, you could use that.
I see.
And very ultimately, nice. Maybe even go beyond PHP. Maybe you say you can use Python or PHP, you know, any one of these databases. But for starters, I figure let's just start with PHP and MySQL, since those are the most common, and those work fine, and most people understand them.
Yeah, right. For your initial goal of providing an application that will be hosted by yourself, it will really won't matter, because ultimately the your client, your customer, will not have access to the code.
Right. Yeah. I mean, who cares, right? I mean, if it's our problem, as long as it works, they're not going to care. And
they are paying you for that.
Exactly. And you know, but I also understand that once you get to scale, sometimes the NoSQL solutions can work a lot better. And I think that Gawin and I we both had a certain amount of interest in the NoSQL solution, and we thought, you know, it'd be really nice to design this ORM so that it sort of can easily switch between generating the code for a NoSQL versus a SQL database, and that would create a certain amount of flexibility in the interface. And you know, I just think, too, once we get to the point where people want to export the entire application to their own server, and having a NoSQL solution, I think, might be a nice selling point, say,
right,
down the road now as those pick up more traction.
Right. Code generation solutions are very interesting. I think sooner or later, every developer reach to a point that we will considering automating part of his development process by using some code generation tool or even develop his own tool. And that is basically what happened to me like 8 years ago. I developed a tool that generates probably not as much as you intend, but at least the model layer, basically the classes that access where the information is stored, and you just give the tool definition of classes that you want to use,
right,
with all the variables that you need. Relationships and validation rules, and then it generates code that accesses the storage container, which eventually is a SQL-based database.
Right.
And it generates several things, like a definition of the schema, because prior to that, I developed a database abstraction layer that makes it all independent of the database. You can switch databases, and it not only it abstracts the access to the database, but also abstracts the manipulation of the schema. So
right,
you can define a schema in XML format. Could be anything else, but in this case, I've chosen XML, and with all the fields of the tables and of the database, and it installs the schema. And next time you need to regenerate the schema, you change something in the XML definition, and it just performs the changes of the database without disturbing the actual data that may be already there in the database. And this database abstraction layer is named Metabase, and the code generation tool is named MetaStorage. And I developed this to solve my problems. It basically generates code like I would do to solve those problems that all web applications based on a database and need to do with all the functions that I need to use in the application. And I developed this and made it open source. And what was interesting to notice that most developers are not very interested in code generation tools developed by others, because mm-hmm. ultimately they don't like the style, the formatting. And this code generation tool that I did even not only generates well-indented, well-formatted code, but it would even add comments to the code where appropriate. So whoever goes and there and analyzes the generated code actually understands what it does. So right. Still that was not sufficient to make it interesting. And this is something that gives me a lot to think, a lot to think about. Probably most developers suffer from the NICE syndrome, the not invented here syndrome, mm-hmm. that prevents them from using code generated by programs written by others. And I don't know, when you analyze other solutions before you implemented yours, what was the feel, if you had a similar feeling regarding the existing solutions?
Well, the existing solutions that I saw were, of course, really high-priced enterprise solutions. So they were really – and it wasn't that they didn't do a good job of – I don't know. I mean, you know what? I don't even think they – I'm not sure how much access they even gave you to the generated code. I think they had some callback functions, some events that you could handle that you could override.
Yeah,
but I don't know. I mean, I know there are some things like PHP Maker and PHP Runner, which allow you to generate some code, which kind of sound similar to what you've described with MetaStorage.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. I mean, I completely understand that. I mean, I definitely suffer from not invented here syndrome, just like everybody else. And
we are all sick.
Yeah, and I think part of the thing is – that's why, in one sense, I don't really want to target developers, because developers are a pain.
Right.
We're a persnickety bunch. We don't want to pay for anything. We don't want to use anyone else's stuff. So why would I really want to, you know, create a product or service for that group of people? They're not very good customers. So I'd rather target designers, people who are maybe co-founders but not that technical or limited in their technical ability, business analysts, you know, people who want to build something. You know, they're the kind of people who could set up an Excel spreadsheet, no problem, configure their Gmail filters, but they're not going to be able to write an entire web application. And right. Now you're giving them a tool that – or you're giving them a solution where they had none before. And I think one of the key – what I'm trying to deliver is not just a tool but a solution. So if you say, well, here's something that's going to help you build your web app, it's not going to give you everything, but it's going to help you, then people are kind of let down, because then they still have to learn a whole bunch of other stuff, and it's just not going to solve the problem entirely. And I'm hoping that at least for the simpler applications, simpler class of applications, you can do everything. You can generate the entire thing. But for more complex ones, you could easily call a coder in and say, hey, listen, you know, I need to do these two or three other little things. And it would be easy for a coder to come in and make those changes, override some functions and tie it into some other existing systems or whatever. So that's one of the reasons I don't want to target the programmers. Yeah. I wouldn't target myself for that reason.
Right. I think you're right in that decision, because if you don't feel you have the demand on that side of the market, of the developers in general, you mm-hmm. should focus on the part that actually you think could be interested in this, because it will be a time saver, a money saver. And it's just interesting to notice that somewhat we all think alike. We developers think alike, and we probably would not use much of what others did if we could, unless it is a miraculous solution. There are some code generation tools for not exactly for this purpose. In PHP, I don't know if you know the Lemon parser generator.
I don't think I've heard of that Lemon parser.
Lemon is actually not a PHP a PHP project. It's a parser generator for parsing languages, code, and a certain syntax, and generating code to parse that code. It usually has a lexer and a grammar to follow, like YACC and Bison and all those tools. And
right.
There is this Lemon implementation, which is used, I think, is used in the latest versions of PHP to generate the core code that parses the PHP code.
Right.
There was a version written a port to PHP to actually generate PHP code. If I'm not mistaken, it was written by Greg Beaver. And
mm-hmm.
The project is available in Pair. I'll post the link in the show notes if you want to take a look. I've heard about it because there is one regular contributor of the PHP classes site, Cesar Rodas, that wrote a parser for the Django templating syntax. So they can use Django templates. I didn't see anything special in the Django templates. It's something similar to Smarty templates.
Right.
And he developed a parser for that Django template system and generated at least part of the code with the PHP port of Lemon parser, and I think for those things, for parsers, which are, well, if you have to develop by hand, it's a really boring task, and it will be a very time consuming, not just to develop the first version, but any upgrades that you do to the syntax of the language. It is probably a more interesting thing than the generating a database form access code. And I think code generation in general, it's not something to be wasted. I think people should be, developers in general, starting by myself, be more open-minded to when considering those tools that exist, especially if they are mature and very capable.
Right. You know, I think that's why generators are so enticing is it eliminates all that really boring, repetitive work. And, you know, I have ideas for dozens of interesting web applications I like to build, but there's just no way that I'd have the time or even the interest in building them all from scratch.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, if I could generate most of this thing and then just write the interesting code, that would be awesome.
Yeah.
You know? And so, and I think, that's what I think. If you have a tool that's powerful enough that allows people to do that, then they might be able to get over the fact that some of the code was not written by themselves.
Right.
But I'm also hoping too that, like, if you target all the people who are part of the application development process, or the people who sponsor the project, or the people who design it, or test it, or conceptualize it, and those people get excited about using a tool like AppIgnite, then the developer will kind of get pulled in reluctantly at the end, right?
Yeah.
Because it's like, oh, we generated this whole thing. We just need a custom callback function that we want to you know, validate this thing based on some external database thing, and the program will be like, oh yeah, okay, fine, I'll do that, and then they'll realize, oh yeah, actually, this does work.
Yes.
That's kind of my hope, you know. Is it kind of just like they say sometimes the way you get a new product or service into a corporation is rather trying to sell it from the top down as going to the executive management. You just everyone at the bottom starts using it on their own, and all of a sudden the managers come by and they're like, "What tools are you using?" And like, "Oh, you know, just put this on the credit card and the corporate credit card, and then they start using it. And I'm kind of hoping that I might be able to pull a similar trick in the development process, because you get the people who can't write the code using it, and then the coders themselves start, you know, get sucked into it.
Right. Well, basically, I think secretly some many developers that reject those code generation tools are sort of afraid of being replaced by a program that does all the work for them. But
You know what the thing is, though, is they just move upstream, right? I mean, you know, we're all smarter, you know, than
We don't program in assembly language anymore, right?
Yeah, I mean, like, do you really want to write, you know, over and over code that's sticking stuff in a database, taking out and validating it and putting on a list and sorting it? I mean, come on. We've written it thousands of times. It's boring. You always make mistakes. It's cut and paste. It's just, wouldn't we like have that done, and then you get to write all this cool, new, interesting stuff that a code generator doesn't provide yet or is too complicated.
Basically, web applications can become way more than a create, read, update, delete application, based application, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I think all it's going to do is just going to raise the bar on what web applications can do, because now it's as the tools become more powerful, we see better and better web applications, and so to get users, they're going to do more interesting, more serious things, which the generators can't do. And the generators will just, of course, they'll always do the most boring, tedious stuff, and then allow humans to do what computers suck at. You know, we get to do the really interesting stuff. And I just think it's dumb for humans to spend their time writing stuff that computers can do just as well, if not better.
Right. You know? That's most compilers.
Exactly.
Can do nowadays. Well, so when do you think you have a version available?
at
least to a part of the audience.
Yeah, on the TechSync podcast, I talk about it, you know, updates, and I initially was planning to have something at the end of the summer, and that slipped a little bit. So I'm hoping to have something, you know, this fall, you know, at the very least, if not, you know, not, hopefully it won't be the end of fall, but it's, you know, sooner. And what I just don't want to do is release something that's going to suck. Like they're going to log in, there's going to be too many errors.
Worry. It will always going to suck somehow, more or less.
Yeah.
All projects suck in the beginning.
No, that's true. And, you know, and I am a believer in release early, release often. I just don't want to, you know, I want it to at least be fairly confident that for most things it's not going to break and we're going to be confused. So, and I was just trying to get a few things sorted out first. Like one of the things I wanted to have it do was be able to automatically generate the API. So you can have an automatically generated REST API for your application.
Right. And will your target market use that REST API?
Not necessarily. That's a good point. But I was kind of tying this stuff in with the you know, the pretty URLs, you know, as opposed to having, you know, you have the, I'm sure you guys know what I mean when I say pretty URLs, right? Sort of REST looking URLs where you don't have these long query strings. Yeah.
Right.
So, you know, and I was trying to get that stuff sorted out because it was sort of related in terms of how the APIs would look. And I wanted to get that sorted out early because if the URL stuff required a significant reorganization of the code base, I wanted to get that sorted out now. I'm looking towards probably within, you know, 6 weeks, 2 months kind of range, and at the longest, get something out there and get my beta testing going. And you know, if anybody who's interested in beta testing AppIgnite, go to appignite.com and just sign up. I'd leave your email address. You know, I want to try and get a few hundred people in before I go to a public beta.
Right. Maybe the audience of this podcast is not exactly the audience that you are targeting, but I think it probably helpful if some of the listeners go there and start trying things just to give you the initial feedback so you can see how it goes.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. It was interesting to talk about your application, also the code generation aspects. But moving on to the another section of our podcast, commenting about some things that happened lately in the PHP world. I would like to comment about a talk that Rasmus Lerdorf, the creator of PHP, gave at DIG headquarters. DIG, for those that are not familiar, is one of those sites that lets you submit news and let have the users to vote on those that are very interesting. And they use PHP, if not for all, for many, many, many tasks that they implement in the site. And Rasmus gave a talk there about aspects related with the performance of PHP. And it was very interesting. He mentioned a lot about WordPress, because WordPress is probably one of the, if not the most popular PHP application, is one of the most popular. And he used WordPress as a test case, also to try the Facebook EPUB PHP compiler, because mm-hmm. the EPUB does something interesting, which is some static analysis of the code, and it turned out to be a useful thing to detect bugs. Code that right. probably doesn't make sense, but it's not invalid. And it was very interesting. I don't know if you guys watched that presentation.
Yes, Manuel, I did. And it's nice to see how different people have different approaches to find common mistakes or performance analysis. And given that Rasmus is a Linux developer, was also useful from the standpoint that the tools that he uses are not familiar to Windows developers and Mac users as I am right now. So it gives a better understanding of how PHP works itself. I recommend everybody who is into PHP to watch it. And it's also nice to get a brief overview of how EPUB applications should be taken into account and where are really the key aspects of performance improvement when basically EPUBing your application.
Manuel, you mentioned we were speaking a little briefly before we started the recording of the podcast. You said that Rasmus slammed WordPress code.
Well, basically, when he used WordPress to show the code problems in the coding that could be spotted using EPUB and also all grind tool. The initial intention is to detect where are bottlenecks and problems in the code in general. It was interesting that he spotted some bugs that, without trying to offend anybody, made the whoever wrote the code look stupid, because it was a very obvious distraction. But I think it is code that could be written by any of us, that something that we wanted to write and wrote something else, and in the end it did not turn into an easy to detect bug. And it was interesting that Rasmus showed that in the code. From what I've heard, I don't use WordPress myself for any of my sites, but from what I heard from people that use WordPress, I think Rasmus submitted a large patch to WordPress, inclusive to make it work better with the Facebook EPUB compiler. So right. people that want to run an optimized version of WordPress could use that compiler. He also mentioned, he also tried to compare the performance of code generated the application generated by PHP code compiled with HipHop, with code that run by the regular PHP engine. And it was interesting that it detected a situation where the compiled code by HipHop was not as fast as the PHP code run by the PHP engine, the Zend engine. And it turned out to be a problem that most people are not aware. When you, for instance, when you ask the system what time is it, for instance, the call time, and the other calls that rely on the information about the time zone that you want the time, it turned out to be a problem that slowed down the PHP code a lot, because it was making a lot of system calls just to get the value of the time zone system variable. And in the latest versions of PHP, I'm not sure, I think it was PHP 5.2, there is now a warning that forces users to set the default time zone. This prevents that the PHP code has to query the system, make system calls to just to know what is the time zone, because it will assume a default, because the time zone will not change during the execution of your script. And once he set that variable, I'm not sure if he set the variable or made those calls to the system not necessary, the Facebook HipHop compiled code became much faster, actually somewhat faster than the PHP engine. And this is very interesting. Another tool that uses Valgrind. I don't know if you are familiar with Valgrind.
I've heard of it. I've never used it. What did he say about Valgrind?
Well, Valgrind is basically a tool that analyzes a sort of logs of profiling. And when you use a code that was compiled with profiling options, you can generate a file and then pass it to Valgrind, which is a program that can analyze the points in your code that it was run, and once and then generate graphs, all sorts of graphs with information how much time was spent in certain sections of the code, so you can detect bottlenecks, so you can concentrate your efforts of optimizing your PHP code just to those sections of your code that are making a greater difference. And that is very interesting. I think, I'm not mistaken, I think it's the Xdebug extension
right,
that supports generating Valgrind files that you can use to optimize, help you to guide your efforts in optimizing your code. I ever actually used this this combination of PHP with Xdebug and then Valgrind to analyze code, because some time ago I need to develop an HTML parser that does a lot of things, not just parsing but also making some security analysis using a DTD to validate the HTML code. And it was to do it all in pure PHP is quite performance intensive. So to prevent that it becomes too slow, I used Valgrind to detect the points in the code that will be worth investing time to optimizing the code. And it was quite quite useful to to do that, but actually I wonder if any of you guys have used Valgrind or similar tools.
I've used Rational Purify in the past.
Oh yeah.
And it's for memory leaks and sorts of code analysis and profiling. And also some profilers in Java that pretty much does the same thing.
Right. Well, Valgrind is actually not a language specific. Any system that can generate profiling files in the Valgrind format could be used. In this case, the Xdebug extension written by Derek Rathen can do that. So I thought it was interesting to notice. Later, I'll post a link in the show notes so people can watch this presentation. It's a video. You can actually see some interesting data on screen of the results that Rasmus reached about this. And I think that will be useful for everybody that wants to optimize their applications, if they have actual bottlenecks that will be worth spending time optimizing. They can watch this presentation and start learning a bit more about these optimization techniques. So now, moving on with our podcast, we're going to have a regular session. Section of this podcast where on which I will be commenting about a few classes nominated to the PHP Programming Innovation Award that goes on every month in the PHP classes site. Well, this month we will be looking at the winners of the classes that were nominated in July. They were voted in August, so September. It was announced the results of this month award. Any classes that any of you guys would like to comment?
I'm looking at the redirection detector. Have you seen that one? Am I looking at the right one?
Yeah.
Number 6. Yeah, that looks interesting. Have you experimented with that one, Manuel?
Well, in theory, I experiment with them because I have to moderate all packages that are approved
okay.
here. And
okay.
It's interesting. It does something that sometimes it's necessary. It's not very obvious.
Right.
Sometimes it's just pages are redirected with the location header. But
right.
Other times they are done. That is done with a meta tag. That
right.
refreshes the page, and so to know what is the page that it is redirected with, you have to actually parse the page, and sometimes that could be useful.
Yeah, that seems to be kind of useful to me. I mean, I was actually working with some redirection issues. That doesn't solve my exact problem, but that seems to be kind of useful. Some of the other ones. So you have like an equation, like evaluate and render polynomial equations. Does that just do that actually draws the actual graph of the equation?
Well, it basically generates the HTML.
It generates the HTML, but does it generate the what's the output for the graph itself or the image? Does it use like the image drawing, the PHP image drawing library?
Yeah, it's not very sophisticated, but it does something that there was no class before here to do, which is to render the polynomial equations. And for people that work with math that want to render this type of equations, it might be useful.
Right. Yeah, that's something pretty interesting. And the people, which is what the manage user accounts.
Yeah, this is a more complex component. It's basically an user interface and actually the database access to manage user records of all sorts of contacts. not specifically just the user information, but the contacts or the type of contact with another person. If you have a phone number, if you have a cell phone, email, and this component provides a solution that actually generates user interface for managing those user contacts. It's from an author, this Michael Furman, that has supplied several other components, all in the same with the same consistency. And there is another one that also from him. And in previous months there are others. One that in this month that we are seeing, July, it manages lists of tasks, as in a to-do list, and these components are what I call application level components. They do not do just something basic. They do more complex things that may consist of database access to manage database records, to show or manipulate the information that is being displayed. And in this case, there is one for managing user contacts, and another is for to-do lists. And there are other components from the same author for other purposes. If you want to have these application-level components in your applications, you may want to try these so you can save some time to do things that often they are common, but if you do it from scratch, it will take some time to you.
So how do you how are the winners chosen?
Well, by the end of the month, these classes are published. I nominate them. It's a simple rule. If they do something that is innovative, then there is no other class in the site that does that. What the nominated classes do, they will be nominated. And in the next month, the users vote on the ones that they think they are more interesting, or whatever is their criteria.
Right.
And sorry?
No, I'm sorry, go on.
No, I was going to ask Hernani, but you can...
Yeah, the polynomial equations is my favorite, because I tend to love mathematics, and I've been writing some LaTeX documents in the past that is very useful for displaying formulas and stuff. And in order to see this producing raw HTML, although it's simple, it's not very sophisticated the way it was done, it does the job pretty well and has my vote.
Yeah. Your comment, Jason?
Well, I don't know. It seems like there's kind of a large range in like complexity here. So like the equation render seems significantly simpler than, say, for instance, the people that manage user accounts. Yeah. I mean, I just thought as at a superficial level, maybe I'm wrong at looking at them, because the managed user accounts seems like that would be very useful for more projects, because that's such a common thing for most web applications, where I would think that the equation render would be sort of rare, that people need to render equations. I mean, maybe I'm wrong. The password meter, is that something that's a AJAX? Was it come back? Because a lot of times it's really cool is when you're typing in your password and it's either turning red, green, yellow, depending on how secure it is, or is it something that has to refresh to test?
No, from what I remember, I'm not looking at the code right now, but it just does that test that evaluates whether the passwords are strong or weak.
It seems like a pretty easy thing, but it actually seems fairly useful.
Right. Well, as I mentioned, the rule to be nominated is to implement something that was not provided in the site before.
Right.
It may have been provided in some other site, but sometimes that's what happens. Some classes are maybe simple, but they are quite useful for whoever voted on them. So they vote because they appreciated something that does what they do, and that is the logic of the this contest. Anyway, the so you understand better this contest. The fact that the class is nominated is already a sort of a win for the author, because what happens from after being nominated is in almost all cases the author has the right to choose a prize from a sponsor, and there the site has so many sponsors now that there are many interesting prizes to choose from. And other than that, is the recognition that the contest provides to the nominated authors. So if they do not get in the first place, maybe it is not the most important thing, but it's still useful. And other than that, I don't know if you wanted to comment on any other classes. I also think that this password meter class, which is true, is quite simple. It just follows some simple rules, but it's still very, very useful. Maybe I should implement something like this in the site to prevent that users use passwords that are too simple, that may prevent that their accounts be abused. But so far I didn't get to a point that I think it would be a priority, but maybe in the future.
I'm curious about one thing, and this is a question for PHP classes in general. Do you have any requirement or style guidelines for the submission of classes?
No. This is something that it would be impossible to ask people. Well, there are other repositories that impose their own rules, but what happens that the number of contributions is very restricted, precisely because of that. So I wanted to, when I created this site, I wanted to have a site that need not want to impose style rules, just because people vary in style, people's code vary in style a lot. And just because the code is not in a specific style, it does not mean that the style is wrong, as long as they use it consistently. And I use my own style consistently. And if I wanted to submit to some other repository that imposes style rules, it probably will not be accepted. And but the fact that it would not be accepted, it would not mean that it would not be useful to others. And I've heard some complaints about other authors that they like a PHP classes site because of it doesn't impose that those restrictions. On the other hand, there are people that complain that each package has its own style and the site does not do anything about it. I think it's not the purpose of the site.
Is the Zend style, because I recently was reading through the Zend style guidelines, because I decided that I should probably, for my code generator, it should stick to some kind of well-known style or well-accepted style. So I figured I would just go with whatever Zend is doing, because they seem like they're the leaders. And just like I used Google's JavaScript style guidelines for my JavaScript.
Yeah.
And I'm curious, from your perspective, obviously you read through a lot of different PHP from a lot of different authors. Are the Zend style guidelines generally considered the standard, or is there no standard? Is there no sort of consensus at all about how to name your classes, what to capitalize, where to put your braces, all that kind of stuff?
Right. I'm probably not the best person to comment about it. What I think it's for an author to comply with a style that is not so similar to his own style is really annoying. It's like telling somebody that writes with his right hand, now you have to write with your left hand. It's kind of impossible. But if you want to make that effort to actually generate code that is compliant with a certain style, probably it will be worth thinking about a certain style I think, if not, I am not mistaken, that Zend Style Guide was based on Pear Style Guide, and probably with some differences. But I'm, as I mentioned, I'm probably not the best person to comment about because I do not follow any of those styles. But I remember a long time ago that I had remember I mentioned that package, the database abstraction named Metabase.
Right.
In the beginning, I thought it would be useful because there was no other package for that. Perform such a level of database abstraction, not only to the access, but also to the managing database schema. I thought about submitting to Pear because it lacked a database abstraction layer that, as I said, provided this level of abstraction, mainly focused on portability of code. And I remember that was there were big discussions because well basically politics. It was a very long time ago. I do not remember the exact details. It's probably all archived somewhere. But what happened in the end? At I suggested that somebody. Ported the code to the Pear Style Guide because it had tens of thousands of lines. I would not have the time and the patience to do it. And actually, it was done by Lucas Smith. He converted Metabase to Pear Style. It was called Pear MDB, which was a sort of merge of Metabase with Pear DB. And then there was a follow-up package, which was not... backwards compatible name Pear MDB2, but there was quite a great effort to make it compliant with the Pear style, and as expected, it introduced some bugs of code that was not well interpreted during the conversion. But over time, I suppose they have fixed it because it was many years ago.
Right.
Okay. But moving on with our podcast now towards the end, we have also a regular section on which I invite the guest, in this case Jason, to comment on a couple of things about the PHP class. PHP class site, one thing that you consider to be good and then another thing that you consider to be bad or not as good. So what do you like to comment?
Okay, I would say that I think the biggest strength of PHP classes is just the depth and breadth of the classes you offer. I mean, there's so much here. So that seems to me to be the best thing about it is that you've really created a true repository. The thing that I find the hardest to use about the site is it seems like I get a lot of redirects when I'm logging in or before. It seems like I have a hard time navigating or seeing stuff unless I'm logged in. So it seems to me that you should be able to – I mean, maybe I'm using it wrong or something, but I just feel like the navigation process and the login process could be a little less obtrusive. Does that make sense? Is that something that makes any sense to you?
Well, regarding the positive thing that you mentioned, it's sort of consensual. It is the long tail of the PHP components. When do you provide something that attracts many contributors? It almost has it's like near 3,000 contributors. It's a lot. It's more than the double of the actual number of contributors of the PHP project.
Right.
And that's sort of the result. So I would say it worked well. Actually, one thing that helped was also this innovation award that encouraged people to contribute. Packages that are innovative rather than yet another MySQL database extraction class, which still appear once in a while, but with this encouragement, people fortunately have been sending a lot of innovative packages that are for all sorts of purposes. As to the login comment, this is something that is commented a lot because it really makes people a little uncomfortable. Some people more than others. Others got used to it. And I don't know, when was the last time that you accessed the site? Do you recall?
Recently? I can't remember when the time I logged in versus when I've used it. I mean, I've definitely been on the site recently. I can't remember the last time I logged in, though, if that was, you know,
was it less than 1 month ago?
It may have been. I'm not sure. I'm looking at the login now. So I'm trying to – yeah, I can't remember. I can't remember how long ago.
Well,
something like that.
What happened recently is that I launched the JS classes site, which is the counterpart site for JavaScript components.
Right.
And because of that, I didn't want the users to create new accounts to access the new site.
Right.
So I implemented a single sign-on system based on the OpenID protocol. And it is all based on redirects, and it requires a lot of verifications of cookies that are sent back and forth. And
right.
let's say that the process is not finished; it still has plenty of room of improvement. Some things are not yet solved because now there are two sites: the site where you have your account, which is a site under the iContain domain, and the PHP classes site or the JS classes site. And there are redirects back and forth because they need to securely exchange tokens of authentication. Obviously, this is should be transparent for the users, but I'm trying to eliminate the appearance of certain redirection messages, which is not always easy. Sometimes you have to use JavaScript to redirect because for some reason the browser is not accepting cookies, because in the authentication window it's actually an iframe in the middle of the page, and it poses certain challenges that I'm still working on better solutions. But so far, they require certain redirects. But it's something that I'm working on gradually, because since I launched this new single sign-on system, many problems popped out that I was not expecting. So I have to solve the one at a time, and it takes some time. But your criticism per se, it's just goes along with the comments of many users. Some came by email, others by Twitter that criticized that aspect. That some people say that now it shows too many proceed links, and that is a bit annoying. I'm aware of the problem. I'm working on it, and over time it will improve. So it was just a coincidence. I asked you if you have logged in before more than a month ago, because that was when the single sign-on system was implemented. So,
I just logged in now, and it seemed like it worked pretty well.
Yeah, there are problems that I did not expect, and that they are the browsers take them not very consistently. Some browsers allow you to set cookies from within an iframe; others don't. And when they don't, I have to show a message for the user to click on a link. And that's where your proceed messages you are seeing came from.
Right. Let me ask you a question too. I'm just curious. How long has PHP classes been around? I mean, I can remember this. I think you've been at least 6 or 7 years probably by now, haven't you?
Actually, it was started in 1999.
Yeah, so even longer. Okay, so
it's old.
Wow.
It's a lot of time. I started in 99, but only in 2001 I started dedicating to it as a full-time job. I mean,
right.
Some people do not believe me, but I do not have a second job. I work on this full-time. I feel privileged to be able to work on my own project full-time and live from it. I don't need or even less want to have another job.
And, oh, that's fantastic. Yeah, that's fantastic.
That's something interesting that I noticed from all entrepreneurs, if I can call myself an entrepreneur, is that all of us would like to be able to work full-time on our own projects. Maybe I'm not getting a millionaire from this because the market is not that large, but ultimately I feel privileged precisely because of that I can work full-time on my own project.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. You know, one thing I was curious about the design is, you know, you have like a different types of ads. Like you have like, you know, the kind of the Google AdSense ads, and then you have a few different kinds. I was wondering if you kind of like consolidated it to one area, like a down the right side or something. Have you experimented much with your ad placement for, I don't know, just in terms of screen real estate, being able to see information more easily and be able to show ads in a way that it's more sort of consolidated.
Right. Advertising is something that nobody likes. But unfortunately, fortunately, is not now. It's not the main source of revenue, and I would like to eliminate it completely. But currently, I can't. Although things are getting better in other sources of revenue, namely the premium subscriptions and the job offers, but it's still not large enough so I can get rid of advertising. As for the placement of the advertising, basically that's where Google tells us to put it.
Oh, really? Okay.
Google says no. They do not impose it. They just recommend that we put it there because most of the ads are paid per click. And if users do not see them, they don't click. If they don't click, I don't make money. So it would be a waste of time. The advertising itself, it's one of the greatest sources of complaints, not only because it distracts the users, but also because it slows down the loading of the pages. And regarding that, I'm been evaluating some forms of loading the advertising asynchronously. Because I think Google Chrome already does that. It loads the ads asynchronously if you have a regular URL specifying the JavaScript that loads the ads. Still, it imposes a certain slowdown. I would like to study to defer the load of the ads until the whole page is completely loaded. But that is just an idea that I'm not sure it will work. We could probably the ads will appear too late and they do not end up not being seen, but it is an idea that I'm thinking of. As for the style and the placement of the ads, I was tipped actually very recently these days. An user is commenting about trying another ad network named Buy Sell Ads, and to replace those the current ads which are mainly Google AdSense by another type of ads, which are probably more visually attractive, they probably work better. Well, as I mentioned, if possible, I would rather eliminate the ads because nobody likes them. But until that is possible, maybe a solution of ads that are probably more appealing, or as long as they they pay more than the current ads in the site, I'm all in favor of that. So just these days I have signed up the buy sell ads. I'm still trying to make time to actually experience with that network. So let's see what can be done in terms of improving the ads.
Right, that's interesting. You know, I have a question about the premium. What do your premium subscriptions do? What do they provide?
Well, premium subscriptions are actually the A plan for trying to make a living from this site. I mm-hmm. planned them in about 2002. And they implement services that somewhat make the site better for the users. And originally, I took suggestions from users, things that they would pay they would pay a subscription to be benefit from those services, and there are several services. One of them is not exactly a service, but one of them is getting rid of the advertising. If the person is paying, it makes all the sense to take the advertising off. Another benefit is you have a sort of recorded searches. You can record a search. Let's say if you want to looking for all components about Facebook, but you don't know when they appear. So you don't have to poll the site all the time to see if there are any Facebook components. You can record the search, and when there is a new component about whatever you searched, you get a you get an email telling, oh, there are these new packages, or these new forum comments, or these new blog articles in the site that about this component that you have written, about this topic that you are interested in. And there are others that anybody interested can check the phpclasses.org/premium. And one of the benefits that seem to have been more successful is that you have an early access to the job posts that are sent to the site. The site can take job posts. You can accept. You can either post a job for free, or you can pay a fee and the job will be posted immediately. If you do not pay the fee, the job will be posted and made available only to the premium subscribers first.
Okay.
So during 3 weeks, that job will be only accessible by premium subscribers. And it turned out to be a good incentive for increasing the number of premium subscribers. So it's something that I learned that is working probably better than anything else that is made available to premium subscribers. It is interesting because I, prior to this business initiative, I did not have a clue what it would be like to put a business to work. And slowly I'm learning from my own initiatives and also mistakes. And it's quite interesting. I think it's a normal process that every entrepreneur goes, but I find interesting that is actually happening to me. Okay, this is have been already quite a long podcast. I don't know if you have any final comments you'd like to make.
Oh no! I've really enjoyed being on. It's been a lot of fun, and I've used PHP classes for years, so it's really been cool to talk to the guy who runs it after all these years. You know, because sometimes you use these applications, these websites, you know, for a long time, and you don't really have any idea really who's behind it. So this has been kind of a unique experience to see behind the scenes a little bit.
Yeah. It's curious. Some people actually know me because of my components in the site, but they don't know that it's actually me that is running the site.
Yeah, you need to put your face up on like the header. So
no, I put, but
yeah.
Nobody knows my face.
You know, like, and what was it like? Some of those social network sites, like Tagged or something. Like, you were the guy, the founder. He was your friend, no matter what. So he was like your first friend.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Like, you'll be everybody's friend on PHP classes.
No. What is interesting is some people think that there is a large corporation behind their PHP classes site running this site because it provides a lot of things and they are very greedy because they put a lot of heads in the site. They want all the money and stuff. But in the end, it's just a regular person that is trying to make a living from a site. The best he knows, being that all is the good way or not so good way, but it's an effort. But it's interesting that the perception that people are getting from the site and whoever runs it.
You know, I actually have one last question for you is, have you seen a change in or a growth in PHP, the number of PHP users? Because it seemed that, you know, 6 or 7 years ago, there was ASP and PHP kind of, and they were sort of in the – and JSP, I guess. And they were displacing Perl at the time. And over that period of time, Python and Ruby have obviously made big inroads. Have you noticed any change in sort of the number of users or the growth of the site and over that period of time?
Well, looking at the PHP classes site, I really could not come to any conclusion because I'm not comparing with any other language community. But from what I've heard, PHP gets stronger and stronger. Obviously, those languages that are more polished, like Java, Python, and Ruby, and they have a certain appeal, I think, to people that already have a college degree.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that is a significant number of developers. I know PHP has been growing a lot, for instance, in countries like India. Actually, India has already surpassed the number of users that was before led by the United States, but it is. But that doesn't tell anything of how PHP has grown or not compared to other languages. It's just a detail relative to the PHP community itself. The perception that I have is PHP is getting larger and larger, and then is having more and more acceptance, even from companies like Microsoft that have their sort of competitor languages. So it is interesting this evolution of PHP. But if you ask me if the success of PHP is the language itself, I don't think it's quite the case. It's probably more the applications like WordPress and Joomla and Drupal. Drupal is quite big. Probably WordPress is bigger, but Drupal is quite big from the number of job offers that I see appearing. And
not forgetting PHPBB, which was the most oftenly used forum on even Java
I don't know if PHPBB is still big. Probably for forums, there probably Joomla or other content management system that includes forums is probably being used more nowadays. I don't know what exactly is the share of those systems, but I'm just talking about from the perception that I got from the job offers. And most of the times, what I see is WordPress, Drupal, and Joomla, and the requests for the jobs and of these applications is even more than any other PHP framework. For instance, if you think of Zen framework and Cake or CodeIgniter or others, they don't have as much demand as those CMSs.
Right. I guess it's probably because the CMSs is just more common. It's like WordPress or something, in the sense that there's many more people who need just something simple to manage a website of a certain type.
Right.
And Joomla is based more for education, isn't it?
Well, actually, I wouldn't be able to tell because I never looked at those systems more closely, but it seemed to me to be a general purpose content management system.
Maybe I'm mistaken, or
you probably are thinking of there is one system that is for e-learning that is also very popular.
Okay,
it's not so popular, or else I would remember the name. There are no job offers for that system, but I think I know what you are thinking about.
Right, right.
Okay, if you nobody else has anything to comment, I'd like to thank you, Jason, for your presence. I hope also next time Justin can make it to the podcast and also to talk about his projects. I think that's all for now.
All right. Well, thank you very much for having me on the show. It's been great meeting you, Manuel. And is it Inani? Am I pronouncing that correctly?
Is there Hernani?
Hernani. I want to make sure you're Hernani. And Hernani, it's been great meeting you too. So thanks again for having me on.
Thanks, everyone, as well.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.